The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Welcome back to the Car Dealer Podcast, where we pick our favorite stories of the week and ask an industry guest to choose which were the best. I'm John Ray, and joining me this week, live from somewhere else in the same Premier Inn as me, is James Baggett. James, hi, John. On the second floor.
Oh, it's lovely, actually. Yeah, I'm glad they gave me the suite at the Premier Inn. Beautiful, beautiful location here in Chester, isn't it? A strange location for us this week, but something different because we've been on the road, haven't we?
Yes, we're very rarely on the road.
Very rarely. Yeah, no, we've had a busy week. Where should we start? We went to see Auto Trader, didn't we, in London. They gave us a little bit of a review of how I've been performing so far with the Clever Car Collection, which was pretty positive, actually. They were very, very polite, let's put it that way, about what we've done so far. Gave us some hints and tips on how to take some, how to do the pictures. They suggested maybe moving the cars away from in front of the beach, where I have been taking pictures at the moment, because it might suggest that they will be rusty. And I hadn't actually thought about that when I took those pictures. So I'll probably do that in future. And they gave us just some ideas on how to improve things, didn't they? And importantly, something they said they would do for any dealer. So if people want advice, contact their account managers at Auto Trader, because I think I found it fascinating. They spent a couple of hours with us just talking us through how we do things, how we can do things better, the sort of things that people are looking for in our area, how we can find out what the demand is for certain types of vehicle and fuel type, using all of the tools in the system. And I certainly learned something, didn't you?
Oh, yeah, certainly. I mean, it's such a nuanced thing. And I think there's an idea that perhaps, well, even for us doing it brand new, it's obviously you've had to go and get advice from Auto Trader on what to actually do. But there's quite a lot of nuance that goes into how you should be writing your adverts, how you should be doing the pictures, strange things like the tagline, I forgot what it's called, the attention grabber, all this sort of stuff. There's a lot, actually, that can have a massive impact just by making very small tweaks. I'm not saying more work, just changing what's in there and what you do. But yeah. Very interesting.
Yeah, and then yesterday,
I'm very pleased to be given an A+ for your efforts so far.
A B plus, and I think you'll find it was an A, John. But anyway, we'll gloss over that. Yesterday though was very interesting, wasn't it? We had our first visit to an auction where we were actually there to buy something. I won't ruin the upcoming video, but I'll just say try to buy something. We had a full day with Manheim in Colchester, where we met the auctioneer. We looked at the prep. We understood how they do their shore check. We understand how they do the grading of these cars. And then we had some decent time looking around the stuff that we'd shortlisted. We shortlisted them the same way as we'd be buying the other cars, looking at retail rating, looking at how quick these things were to sell. We wanted stuff that was low mileage. We wanted stuff that had decent service history, that didn't need much prep. Basically, the sort of cars that every other dealer in the world wants to buy. So it was actually quite competitive. We shortlisted about 4 out of 300, and then tried to win them in the evening at the sale. It was quite an experience, wasn't it? I mean, I would describe it as a little bit of a bear pit. I mean, it was hugely busy. There were loads of people there, very, very competitive, and we got some incredibly funny looks, didn't we, for walking around with our influencer cameras.
That might have just been how we were dressed.
Or how you were dressed.
Yeah, yeah. I spoke to you know, just a random employee, you know, in my casual small talk, sort of, oh, it's busy, isn't it? And they said, not really. So really? I think it would actually get worse than that. I think, you know, it was a 4-lane auction, wasn't it, in one room? So there was a lot of competing tannoy stuff going on, a lot of cars going through, a lot of fumes. Bit of a surprise for you, because you've bought cars in a very luxurious way so far, haven't you? Where you've
Well, actually, on that subject, John, can I very quickly, just before we welcome our guest, just tell you the story about the Skoda Fabia, the yellow, famous Skoda Fabia estate that I went to pick up last week, which had been bought from Carwow, went up to see the lovely couple that were selling it, the Browns, who live in Surbiton, leafy part of London. Got there, had a good look around the car, wasn't quite as described, shock horror.
It wasn't yellow.
No, it was definitely yellow. It was most certainly very much yellow. Had a little look around it, a few little problems, nothing major, but then I took it for a test drive with the 82-year-old Mr. Brown in the passenger seat.
Oh.
We got onto the
This is like a Paddington Bear story, James.
I know. We got onto the A3, and obviously had to accelerate up because it was fast moving traffic. So in this little 1.2 Fabia, accelerated up to 2,500 RPM very gently in each gear. And he turned to me and said, Oh, I've never driven it like that. And I was like, what? Normally, this poor guy, he's looking at me thinking I'm ragging his Skoda Fabia up the road. And then the engine warning lights start coming on. So we pull off the car starts juddering, pull off the A3 into the sort of more local roads. It was by this point firing on probably two cylinders. We could do a maximum of 10 miles an hour, which in London isn't a problem. But we limped home back to his house. And I said, I'm really sorry, but I think there's something wrong with the ignition. A coal pack's gone or something.
Sorry, James.
I'm really sorry. I've broken your car.
Yeah, I didn't quite. When you told me this previously, it was just, I got in it and it was misfiring. Yeah, I drove it quite hard and then it broke. That wasn't part of the tale.
I mean,
you're right to do so, but okay. So then what?
The poor Mr. and Mrs. Brown, I told them that I didn't actually want to buy their car at that point because it was broken. So I asked them where the nearest train station was. And Mr. Brown was so polite, he took me there. We walked down the road together. And by the time we got to the train station, realised it was all bus replacement service. So in the end, on Friday afternoon last week, I ended up getting a bus from Surbiton to Kingston for 45 minutes. I mean, something I haven't done since I was at school. And then I got onto something else, which they classed as a fast bus, a bit of an oxymoron that, which was going to go to Heathrow, where I had a colleague who was doing some work, who then picked me up and took me home. The whole experience took 8 hours and I didn't buy a Skoda Fabia. I can see why people want to go to auction. Horrendous. Right, let's move on. Let's stop talking about my woes and introduce our guest.
Yes, yeah. So our guest this week is Ian Cooper from software provider DealerKit. Ian, lovely to have you on.
Likewise. Morning, guys. How are you?
Not bad.
I'm not to laugh then in the background, listen to the fabulous story.
This is James's life now.
The Fabia story, it has got a part two, and that is after John and I leave Colchester, we are going back to see Mr. and Mrs. Brown, who have had the car fixed in the interim and have now offered it to me at £1,250 less than I bid in the first place. I'm going to go and pick it up on my way home and hope I actually get it back to Gosport.
I was going to say, I thought you dodged a bullet, but obviously you've gone back for it. So.
Oh, God. Gone back for it. I couldn't refuse a £1,250 discount, which was over 25% of what I'd bid in the first place. So, I'll be going. Ian, you've been very helpful on our Clever Car Collection journey. I think it's probably worth just explaining what DealerKit is and what you do and just how we got to the point where we ended up talking and you helping us out.
Yeah, so obviously DealerKit is a DMS or dealer management provider. It sort of originated from motor traders or motor dealers. It's probably been grown on the back of over 100 years combined motor trade experience. And that's kind of been originated from Richley Motor Company in Essex. One of the business partners, Lee, him and his dad own the garage. They've been running that for now about 38 years. Very successful, done a fantastic job, grown from selling a bit like you, James, a couple of cars on the side of a petrol station, and then grown it to what it is today with probably about 150 cars in stock. They were sort of old school pen and paper, didn't have dealer management systems in the original days. Lee, being the younger blood, came into the business and started sort of, as it upscaled, was finding it hard to sort of track where cars were, what you're making, losing, prep standards, all that sort of stuff. So they went looking for a DMS provider, couldn't quite find what they wanted, and everything felt a little bit dated and a bit clunky, and they thought it wouldn't transition well in the business. So about 10 years ago, they thought, let's build our own. Oliver, the other partner, he's the genius that builds the system. He was doing their websites for them at the time, but his main profession is coding and development. And he basically said, well, we could build you a basic invoicing tool. Then on their experience, it was like, what about if you could do this or do that, post their adverts, et cetera, et cetera. And it kind of just was modularized, and we bolted on section, grew it to what it was. And it was only about 2 years ago, we realized we had a product that could help other dealers, predominantly use independents. And we sort of started going to market where it's customized and branded to suit their business. And now we're helping people from the one-man bands sort of trading from their driveways right up to sort of large supermarkets with sort of 1,000 cars in stock. And the feedback so far has been fantastic. Our whole ethos is to try and make everything simple, intuitive, and a little bit flexible. So we try and adapt to how dealers work. We do a lot of customization to help them and how their processes currently work. But yeah, the response has been amazing.
I mean, I've been using it now for probably 3-4 weeks. I've turned into one of your best salesmen, haven't I? I mean, I'm putting it, every person I speak to, I mention that we're using this system, using your system, because I think it's brilliant. I genuinely do. It's really, Thank really you. And I think some of the things that it does, the way it integrates with Auto Trader and the advertising platforms, the way you can advertise cars, upload the pictures and use it for pricing, I think is a fantastic integration. And I think the best bit for me was the way you can stack the deals, the way that you can input the customer, the way it outputs all of the documentation that you want so simply, and you can send it to them via the system, and importantly know when they've looked at it and know when they've opened the attachment. I think that's really, really clever, because you know what it's like when you're dealing with customers. You want to know when they've looked at your stuff. You want to know whether they're in front of their emails checking stuff, and whether they've read it. And I found that really useful. I mean, I know I'm only scratching the surface of what the system can do, but from what I've seen, it's really good. How many dealers have you got on the system now?
We're sort of approaching the sort of 100 mark at the moment. So we're only going for sort of 2 years. We've got quite a few waiting to go live, and I'm probably speaking to about 30, 40 dealers at the moment with prospecting and sort of appointments booked in. So it's really sort of starting to, we've tried to grow organically. One of the key things that we like to do is go out and meet the dealers in person, build those relationships, get to meet the team, understand how the business works. And that for us is really important. So we could upscale and go a lot bigger, faster, but we believe we want to try and give that service and never lose that. So it's going really, really well. We're a small team, small business compared to some of the competitors out there. I think we're just starting to get some recognition. We haven't advertised yet. We haven't done any marketing. It's all been through word of mouth. And like I say, it's been really well received. We've had some fantastic testimonials and feedback from our customers.
Yeah, you've seen
And we're sort of, it's sort of growing across the whole of the UK now. I'm sort of travelling from, I was in sort of Devon yesterday, I'm in Wales this morning, and I'm in Inverness next week, and sort of everywhere in between. So racking up some miles at the moment.
Yeah, every time I speak to you, you're on the road somewhere, aren't you? And getting out there and seeing the deals. I think the personal service is really important. I mean, it's very much how I'm running my business. And I think the fact that when you came down and helped show me how to use the system, it meant that it was a lot easier for me. You know, it's all very well setting people up on new things, but when it's something as complicated as a DMS, you need the help, don't you? You need, and importantly, you need someone to understand how you would use it, how individual business.
I think that's it. And we've tried to design it so that it is intuitive and simple. And you could give someone logins and they could almost fathom it out themselves. And we've had some dealers that we've given sort of demo accounts to, and they've kind of said, I'm pretty much happy with it all. But like if they're getting the most from it, there's sometimes, you know, on the reporting side and things like that, there's data you want to extract, and perhaps that's the bit where we can layer on. And there'll be little shortcuts here and there we can show people. But also they won't realise that there's things they can do that will save them time and money in other areas of the business. And I think because we're all come from either main dealer or independent experience, and we know the motor trade so well, we find ourselves indirectly sort of consulting for these dealers, and we sort of share best practice, and you know, they ask us a lot of questions about other dealers and how they do things. So we're sort of building a nice network of, and all of our customers have just been fantastic. You know, there's not one dealer there we've sort of not gone with. They're great people. It's amazing how different they run their businesses to each other. But the glue to that is Dealer Kit, and seems to be helping everyone no matter how they trade. And they get different things from different parts of the system depending upon how they operate and their integrations.
And what's your background, Ian? I mean, have you been in the how long have you been in the motor trade?
Yeah, so I've been in the motor trade probably about 20 years or just under. So my main dealer, my main background was main dealer background. I was sort of 15 years with Audi. I did a little bit with BMW in between, but and then sort of promoted within the group I worked for, and went to sort of run a Jaguar Land Rover dealer in Southend. And then I sort of got an opportunity to go and work with Ritchley Motor Company. Been with them for sort of 4 years. I've had to unfortunately sort of step away now because Dealer Kit is sort of taking over and I'm on that full time now, but learned a lot. And I went from sort of main dealers, unfortunately, have a systems where they'll have maybe 8 to 10 different programs. They'll have one for their accounting software, one for their stock management, one for invoicing and so forth. And you live between sort of 10 different screens. And nothing talks to each other and nothing amalgamates. And when I first went to Ritchley and started using Dealer Kit in its earlier stages, I was like, wow, this is so easy to use. It does everything in one package. And then obviously from my experience, there's been suggestions and ideas of added to Dealer Kit that I've offered. And Oliver's very nicely built. And it's kind of just, again, continued to grow. And there's loads more in the pipeline. We've got ideas as long as your arm, and lots of on the horizon that we're building at the moment. So it's just going to get better and better, and we can offer our customers an even better product as we grow.
And you've been helping and advising when it comes to my business with the AI side of things as well. I mean, what are your thoughts on AI in the motor trade?
Very good question. I'll be honest with you, when I first heard your concept of the AI project, I kind of felt, oh, not sure that's going to work, purely because I think that customer to customer or person-to-person relationship is paramount. And I've always been successful in what I've done because of the relationships I've built with my customers. But when I've understood it more about how you're using it to, you know, write advert descriptions or perhaps answer inquiries and respond to inquiries, sometimes we will, because Dealer Kit has a CRM section and you can see full visibility of every conversation between the sales exec and the customer. Like you said, you can see responses and bits and pieces. Sometimes we'll look at it and someone's grammar may not be that great, or they might be a little bit blunt on their responses. So I know we're working with you at the moment to sort of develop and push the boundaries on this AI, and whether it be responding to inquiries, talking to the system and educating it and tailoring its responses that way. So there's, I think you've opened our eyes up and excited us from our side as to what is possible. And I think it'll be down to dealers to, Some won't want to use it at all. Maybe they'll feel that's, you know, not the way to go. I think a lot will, and I think there'll be varying levels of integration in regards to, some may just use it for like an out-of-office thing. So, you know, if an inquiry comes in, they'll want to respond to it themselves. But from 6 o'clock when they leave the office, they can switch that on. And I think most customers now are probably online, you know, after work in the evening. So a lot of the inquiries will come through during that period. If they can have a qualified conversation with someone and ascertain all the information they need and realise it's not just a automated chatbot type response where they can't really help them out, but you then come into the business the next day and you've got a qualified lead with an appointment time, you know, what their part exchange is, what they're looking to finance, et cetera, et cetera. I think that'd be really powerful. But obviously the ultimate bit, I think, is in the final stages needs to be, you know, that customer dealing with you and building that relationship, which you've so clearly done so well with your reviews and bits and pieces.
Yeah, interesting. I'm really excited about going on that journey and getting your help with it. So thanks for everything you've done so far. But Right,
I
well,
think it.
thank you for joining us today. I think we probably should move on to some stories, though.
Okay, so James and I are going to run through our favourite stories of the week, and at the end, Ian gets to decide whose stories were the best and who is the winner. I seem to be still winning, so I won last week, so I'm going to start. I am going to start with finance. So, obviously, the FCA investigation is rumbling on in the background. We're hearing little news from them in terms of, I mean, it's going to be ages before that's concluded, I would imagine. But in the interim of this sort of vacuum of news, there's a lot of noise about discretionary commission arrangements, as they're called, and what exactly is going to happen. And there's a lot of questions from all sides on what on earth is going to happen. There's questions from consumers as to, can I have some money, please? There's questions from who's going to be liable for these things. The general consensus at the minute is it's probably, we hope, from a dealer point of view, it's going to be mainly lenders. But the news I'm going to talk about is Lloyds Banking Group have put aside £450 million to deal with the FCA investigation, were it to conclude in such a way that they need to hand some money back. That sounds like a huge amount of money. It is. However, that is, if you compare it to their £7.5 billion profit, that's 6.5% or something of their profit they've put aside to deal with this. It's not... I mean, it's not small potatoes, but it's not exactly going to sink Lloyds Banking Group, I would suggest. Their bosses also don't expect claims to reach the same levels as the PPI scandal, they've said, which is slightly reassuring, isn't it? Because everything at the minute is sounding a little bit scary. Possibly it's because we've got the gap issue going on completely separate at the same time, but it's just... Finance is sounding even more scary than usual at the minute, isn't it?
The the thing you've mentioned there, John, about this £450 million being a lot of money and relating that to PPI, I was reading in the Times this morning the same story that we've reported on here, and they just had a fact in there that I just thought was really interesting. And at the time the PPI scandal came out, Lloyd set aside £3.2 billion to deal with that PPI compensation. Their eventual final bill for PPI, £22 billion.
Wow.
So there is a bit of a disparity here between how much they're putting aside at the moment and what the eventual bill could be. I think that just to give you an example of quite how jumpy the banks are about this, we wrote a story last week about Close Brothers putting aside some money, didn't we?
Yeah.
And in that story, we said that the FCA were investigating the commissions and that it was an investigation. Well, I very rapidly received an email from their PR people saying, this is not an investigation. It's definitely not an investigation. It's an inquiry. And I was thinking... What on earth is the difference between an investigation and an inquiry? But it shows you quite how jumpy they are, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If they're worried about the words that you're using in a story on Car Dealer magazine about this, then they really are concerned.
I suppose an inquiry is... I mean, yeah. That, to me, an inquiry is lots of people sat in a room asking questions and not actually being given, you know, not... Investigation is like... I'm going to deep dive through all these millions of finance applications and see if this was mishandled, which obviously is...
I'd say it's the same word.
It is the same thing. It's an early part of it, isn't it? In effect, they are investigating. It's a matter of language, really, isn't it? Yeah. So
there's a lot of concern about this, though, isn't there, John? And I think it's... I think for the dealer side, I think dealers want to know whether they're going to be liable for any of this. And at the moment, nobody knows. That is the question that everybody keeps asking. We know it keeps coming up time and time again. Dealers want to know whether they're going to have to be... Are they going to have to fund any of this compensation if it happens? I don't know. I can't answer. What do you think, Ian, on this? I mean, do you think... I mean, what are your thoughts on this whole saga?
It's a bit scary, isn't it? I think... Car dealers, like you said the other week, we seem to have interest at the moment, and it's a shame they just seem to kick after one thing after another. It's not the gap, it's the FCA bits on the commissions. For me, I feel like it's, if you've changed the law and regulations from that point onwards, then regulate it and enter it. But it seems like they're going back before that was passed, when dealers were exposed to the risk, I suppose. But yeah, for me, I just think it's one thing after another, and it could be huge. It could be huge. And I think dealers are worried. There doesn't seem to be, obviously we're speaking to dealers every day, it doesn't seem to be that much rippling at the moment. A few have had a few inquiries, but it does seem to be more with the lenders. However, like you said, I think they're going to naturally want to try and push and claim some of that back from the dealers. But how that would look from a payment profile, I don't know. It's scary.
Yeah, it's certainly a worry. And I just think it's one of those things that we're just going to have to see. Wait and see. We're just not going to know. I think the investigation, sorry, inquiry concludes in September. And I think at that point, we'll know a little bit more.
We'll be right back. The Car Dealer Podcast is sponsored by SalesLink from Jato, a market insight tool that's purpose-built for franchise car dealers. Get analysis on thousands of new vehicle transactions every month from all the major brands. See model mix and trim data for the brands you sell, as well as competitor data, all in the free web-based platform. It lets you track vehicle option uptake, color preferences, and gives detailed data on pricing and discounts. Sign up for your free SalesLink account today. Visit jato.com/saleslink to start unlocking your market insights.
Right, shall I move us on, John, away from scary CA stories? And I'm picking a story that we published earlier this week, and it's news from Fiat calling on the government to reinstate the plug-in car grant, boost EV demand. I mean, it is a big story at the moment, isn't it, on these EV sales targets that manufacturers have been mandated by the government this year, 22% in 2024. In 5 years' time, that rapidly rises to 66%. But I think in particular this year, it's going to be tough because car makers are going to face those punishing fines of £15,000 per car if they miss their targets. And Fiat have come out and called on the government that they think we need some assistance. We think they need the government to put their hand in their pocket again and reinstate that plug-in car grant. And this is off the back of that House of Lords inquiry. I'm going to keep using that word today. That House of Lords piece where they came out with the report into the EV market, which said they think we need incentives again to push EV sales. And in particular, Baroness Parmenter, who we spoke to just after that report came out, said it was the one thing that she thinks the government can do to help the market right now is put back those incentives for consumers to go out there and swap into an EV. But it was interesting, the reason I picked this story, I think it's interesting to see that a manufacturer has come out and spoken that they really think this is what the market needs. They're saying we're doing all we can to get people into EVs, but we need some extra assistance from the government. We've got a budget just around the corner. I wouldn't be surprised if we see something in the budget that that would be along these lines. We know that the plug-in car grant and those sort of scrappage schemes we've had in the past are sort of self-funding, actually, because of the VAT returns the government gets. The government are mandating manufacturers have to hit these targets, so really they should be able to help them out. We know that EV demand is dropping and has dropped fast this year. I think it's down considerably, 25.1% year on year in January, EV sales were down. So something needs to be done. And I also quite like this story because Fiat have superimposed their cars in front of Downing Street, and they had to point out the fact that they weren't allowed into Downing Street to take a picture of a 500e, and it was, in fact, computer generated. So just in case you were wondering whether Rishi had let them in. But yeah, I don't know. What do you think, John?
Well, no, I did. I thought that about the image as well. They've also colour matched the. There's a sort of thing of a man holding up a briefcase like the budget announcement, and they've colour matched it to the 500. Yeah, I had this on my list as well. Two reasons. One, this is actually the second time Fiat has said this in about 6 months. They said the same thing back in June or something last year when they launched the excellently named Fiat e-Grant again. I won't make the same joke again, but anyway, yeah, so they're still banging the same drum. I find it surprising that they're probably, as far as I'm aware, the only major manufacturer to be doing so. Nobody else seems to be all that bothered. You know, we speak to, let's say, Honda, And Honda say, well, you know, everyone's just quietly confident that they're going to hit the target, aren't they? They have their ways of doing it, whether it's incentivizing the prices at their own cost or pushing stuff into different channels. Nobody seems to be, I think everyone's probably panicking about it, but nobody's actually vocalizing that apart from, oddly, Fiat. I do think they're right. The other thing is there's, it's not a consistent school of thought that people should be doing, you know, the government should be doing this, because people we've spoken to as well, some say, yes, we need all this. Some say, no, what we just need is consistency. This is the problem. Like, if you bring in another grant, which won't last forever because they don't, it creates even more problems. And I mean, the grant that we had before, that existed for quite a long time in one guise, didn't it? And then it got sort of adjusted and chipped away. So I think the first thing was they adjusted the maximum price. Then suddenly all the manufacturers had to knock their cars under a certain price point. Then it kept getting smaller and smaller. And then suddenly it was just pulled completely. That is not helpful if you're a manufacturer either and you're trying to plan stuff. So perhaps there's an element of, there's a reticence from manufacturers to ask for these things because they know actually it's not as simple as just being given a grant, because there's the nightmare that comes with it after that as well. That's my
Ian,
thought. What do you think?
Ian, what do you think? Yeah, is it? I mean, what are the dealers saying to you when you're out there talking about the market and electric cars?
I mean, again, I think most dealers are scared of electrics because they've either bought them, trialed and dipped their toe in the water and got stung with the prices dropping so quickly. That said, I know Lee spoke to a dealer at an award event the other night, and they're selling about 150 electric vehicles only every month. So there's clearly demand out there for it. There isn't a big enough demand, and I think everyone's realising the issues with the charging stations and the range anxiety. It's just not quite there yet, in my opinion, and I don't think the public got behind it like the government thought they would do. So I definitely think a grant of some sort or incentives, a bit like the scrappage scheme, those kind of things, will definitely kickstart it. But I don't know. I've driven electric vehicles and I've worked in the main dealer trade. They are fantastic. They're great in a lot of respects. But certainly for like me now doing the driving that I'm doing, I couldn't find the time to stop and charge. And I couldn't sort of keep looking for hotels that have got charging points. And even when you get there, a lot of them are taken up or don't work. So there's just not that sustainability and an infrastructure, I don't think, at the moment to fully run it out.
I think that's right. Shame. You know, like, you could take 1,500 quid off the price of a Fiat 600 or whatever that new crossover is that I'm staring at here. But that £1,500 isn't going to help you charge it if you need to use it in the way that you're hoping.
I do think we'll see a bigger uplift this year with a lot of these Chinese manufacturers bringing over to the UK. And I think they'll be more affordable with a lot more equipment. And from a dealer I've been speaking to, I think the range they're now going to be getting and the charging times, it's almost like they've started to crack that market. So I think as technology improves, I think you'll get more of a buy-in. But at the moment, I think most people are avoiding at the moment and want to continue with their petrol diesel engines.
That is the perfect segue into my next story.
James, is it your story or is it my story?
No, it's definitely my story. That was yours.
Was it?
That was James's story, unfortunately.
Oh, sorry. Coffee hasn't kicked in. Carry on.
It's your story. No, it's your story.
Oh, it's my story. Right. Your story. Okay.
Sorry. Well, I can't use a segue, but maybe you can. Who knows what you're going to pick?
Well, I'm going to probably not segue into an electric story. I'm going to segue into you, Les. Is that where you're going with?
No.
Okay. Well, I'm doing it anyway. So, you, Les. Well, I mean, it's controversial, isn't it? But one of the most controversial elements of it was there was a scrappage scheme. There is a scrappage scheme for residents of London to get rid of their old cars, receive a little bit of money from, a reasonable amount of money, actually, from Transport for London for getting rid of their car, not even necessarily buying another car, but getting a bus pass, whatever they want to do. The thing with that is there was I don't know if anyone has noticed, but there's a slight conflict going on over in Eastern Europe at the moment. And as we've highlighted, there's quite a need for vehicles of all sorts, you know, pickup trucks, ambulances, vans, whatever. I mean, even normal cars at this point, I think. And there was an argument that rather than crushing all these perfectly serviceable cars, which are not suitable for driving into London anymore, unless you want to pay £12.50 a day, there's a use for them for other things. And I think there was a reasonable call to arms, if you'll pardon the pun, of asking Sadiq Khan and Transport for London to stop scrapping these cars and send them off to Ukraine if they're necessary, if they're useful there instead. Perhaps, you know, not a Fiat Cinquecento, I imagine, more like a sort of Nissan Navara or whatever. It's been, I mean, how long has the ULS scrappage scheme been going now? Over a year, I think. Sadiq has now done a bit of a U-turn and has said, okay, I think we should get this going. So he's spoken to Transport for London, which of course is slightly separate to his remit anyway. And I think he's spoken to apparently Transport Secretary Mark Harper. And he's been told that there are no legal obstacles to cars being given to Ukraine, as opposed to being squished and turned into tin cans. So he now wants to start doing this. We're still quite far away from actually happening. This is just a case of he's asked TfL to make it happen. So a plan could be launched in weeks, says this story. But I think that's good news. I mean, it's a bit late because, I mean, there's a figure in here, 40,000 cars have already been scrapped. Which it's a shocking figure anyway, isn't it? Aside from whether they didn't go to Ukraine or not. That is, I'm amazed that 40,000 cars have been scrapped as part of this already from just London. Yeah, amazing. But hopefully, going forwards, they'll be put to better use.
Yeah, and also nice to see in this that the London Ambulance Service is going to donate 50 decommissioned ambulances to the cause, 10 of them in the next few weeks, with 40 by the end of the summer, they say. But yeah, it's that figure that you've highlighted there, the 40,000 vehicles scrapped on this scheme. It just does show you, doesn't it, that scrappage schemes work. And actually,
well, this isn't even a scrappage scheme in the traditional sense of our one from 2008 or whenever the last one was. This is quite a complex thing to apply for. You can't do it at a dealer. You have to go and go through the process yourself directly with TfL, and then they give you some money. So it's not a simplified thing to go and do. Were this actually available for car dealers to scrap the cars and pass the savings on, that would be a different matter. But as far as I'm aware, this is a case of you have to scrap it yourself, and then you go and, as far as I'm aware, last time I looked, it was you arranged to have it scrapped. You then submit the certificate of being destroyed to TfL, then they give you some money. That's quite labour intensive, isn't it? Compared to just going off to your local Hyundai dealer and being given an i10 in exchange for your ropey old Nissan Sunny or whatever.
There's also a lot of hate for scrappage schemes as well, isn't there? On the flip side of the coin. I mean, I remember when we were reporting on the first one, like you say, back in 2000. Was it really 2008 when that was?
It might even have been earlier than that. Yeah.
But when that was happening, there was a huge backlash, wasn't there? That there was these beautiful old cars being scrapped that actually could have a second life somewhere else, and people were using them to buy a Hyundai i10 or something similar, which was obviously a bit of a shame. So I don't know how I feel about scrappage schemes. I like the idea of boosting the market, but also I don't like the idea of seeing beautiful old Escorts disappear to the scrap.
Sorry, beautiful old Escorts.
No, I like Escorts.
RS Cosworths were scrapped as part of. I don't think anyone traded one of those in for an i10. I think it was more like your Fiesta Popular Plus.
That was one of my first cars, 1.1. Beautiful.
I know it was, James. Doesn't mean it's any good.
Ian, what do you think about scrappage schemes and these sorts of things?
Yeah, again, I think we live in a world now where everything is looking at wastage. And there's definitely a lot of good cars out there that don't meet the regulations, but are still perfectly good vehicles. And I think the idea of sending them to Ukraine is absolutely fantastic. And what a great cause. And I really hope and pray that goes through and starts to make a difference. And I think people would more actively knowingly donate their car to a good cause and upgrade their car to a new car when they know it's not just going to be squashed. And a lot of people are sentimental over their vehicle. So to know it's going to go to a family in Ukraine, I think is fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, even like the man with the yellow Dakota before James broke it, they were very sentimental about the car, weren't they?
What did they break?
Yellow Skoda.
Yeah, let's go now. Yes, true. Yeah.
You know, well, the message you got, James, it was along the lines of I hope someone loves it in the way that we did. She's very
I
sweet.
It goes over age, James. I think that's a great cause, and it's all in the right colours, which is a bit of blue on there.
Very good point. Very good point. Right, I will move us on back to that segue that I thought was my go, but wasn't my go. And this is the exciting new car brands that should be on your radar. This is a story that we published at the weekend. And talking about, funny enough, the car brands you should be looking at. And I just, we've got a couple of these guys at Car Dealer Live, which is happening in 2 weeks' time. And Neo is on the list, and we've got Matt Galvin, who is the managing director of Neo. Currently, no dealers in the UK. And I think that is their plan. I don't think they are going to have any dealers. And I think they're going to do this agency style model with direct sales to consumers. And we've seen how that's gone, haven't we, for some people in the past. So it'll be interesting to see how that pans out, and interesting to hear from Matt what his plan is. We've also got BYD on the panel, who are also on this list. They've currently got 25 dealers in the UK. They've partnered with the likes of Snows, Pendragon with their Stratstone brand. I think Arnold Clark have taken them as well. And I think BYD is one that I'm really interested in. I like the fact they've now moved away from the build your dream name and shortened that to BYD. I haven't driven one of their cars, but the guys in the office who have say they're really good. So I'm very fascinated to actually see. We're going to have two of them, aren't we, at Car Dealer Live on either side of the stage. So people will be able to have a good poke around them. We've got Mark Blundell, who's their marketing manager for the UK, in charge of their dealer network, who's going to be on the stage talking about that too. But the other interesting one on this list is Omada. I don't know. I should probably learn how to say that. This is
Omada, James.
This is Cherry Omada. Thanks, John. Thanks. They've got some interesting cars. They're hoping to have 50 dealers in the UK. They're already signing up people. They've signed up listers, Arnold Clark and Greenhouse, among their first partners, and they're rapidly looking to expand that. So it'll be interesting to see what they've got. I think they might be attending Car Dealer Live too. I'm very much hoping that we're going to have one of them on the panel. They haven't confirmed yet, but I know they're going to be coming along. So I was just, the reason I picked this story is we did a bit of a poll this week in our WhatsApp groups, asking people which of these brands they were most excited about and which one they think was going to be the most popular and most successful. And BYD, with the results that came in, was by far and away the runaway success. And I think I probably agree with them. They're an absolute powerhouse. They get a lot of national press coverage. And when I was writing the story about their appearance at Car Dealer Live, I did a little bit of research into it. And last year, 2023, they sold 3 million passenger cars across the world. Well, they are a big manufacturer, and they might be a new name for us over here, but they are very successful in their home market and other markets around the world. So it's going to be fascinating to see how these challenger brands, as they've sort of been named, are going to take on the might of the existing manufacturers we've got here. And I think if I was a betting man, I'd probably put my money on BYD. I don't know. What about you?
Well, I think BYD have already established themselves, haven't they, as you said, well, I say they've already established themselves. You do see, I've seen quite a few of them around and about already. Weirdly enough as well, driving around London yesterday, half the buses, the electric buses in London are BYD, proudly on the front. Doesn't say build your dreams on the buses, funny enough. Just says BYD.
I mean, I certainly had a dream when I was on the bus last week getting to Kingston.
It might have been a BYD. Maybe you didn't notice. Your speedy Heathrow Express. I feel slightly a bit in the sea about these things, because I don't know about you, James, but you feel like you exist knowing a reasonable amount about cars, being in the business that we're in. You know, you kind of, people would call you a car nerd or whatever. And then I see things like Omada and I think, oh, what is that? And that's news to me that they've got 50 dealers. That's relatively...
I think
they want to have 50 dealers. But, you know, they've signed up people. That's news to me. And what's their other brand?
Yang Wang?
You haven't they?
Yang Wang?
See, I don't know. I honestly don't know. And this list that we've got here...
have just made that up. I don't know.
You may have. This is a drop in the ocean, isn't it, compared to all the Chinese brands that exist, a lot of which are in Europe. So we've seen them. You haven't been to a motor show in ages, James, because you don't like to leave the house. But last time I went to a European motor show, there were things like Chang'an. Have you heard them? Heard of them? They're quite a big Chinese manufacturer. There's various other ones that I cannot remember, which have not made it over here because we are right-hand drive, Europe's left-hand drive, so it's a lot easier for them to hunt them over there. There will be a massive wave of these things, and we are only seeing a little trickle of them so far.
I've made a bit of a mistake with Yang Wang. I've just googled it, and he is in fact a Slovak table tennis player,
Right.
not a car brand, not a
I
car
see.
brand. Just want to clarify that.
Well, that's disappointing news for us all. Yeah. You see my point there. You see my point. We're so out of touch now.
Yeah, we should probably know this, shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Oh dear. Ian, are you excited about any of these brands or table tennis players?
pretty much table tennis electric brands, but no, I think I mean I know there's another one, Chery Automotive. I think they're coming over. They're looking to
That
grow and
is a
expand.
motor. That is a motor.
Oh, is
They're
that Moda? Oh, okay.
yeah, they've sort of
They,
kind
you know,
of they've
have a
renamed
lot of
themselves.
different names, like
Right.
Aura is Great Wall Motor and all these. Yeah. Well,
Just to confuse matters further,
Yeah, it
they've
gets
actually
confusing.
renamed themselves.
But no, like I said, I think they're going to disrupt the market and probably boost the EV market, I think, offering a more affordable range. And like you say, looking at BYD, I've not seen one or driven one, but I think they look like they're going to be really well finished inside, high tech, and good looking cars. And if they can get their range up and the charging times down, I think it'd be a more attractive prospect for customers.
What I will say
So
about
yeah, we look
BYD
forward to
as
seeing
well,
them.
again, I haven't driven BYD either, but I have sat in one at a motor show. I've sat in a couple of them. And what I took away from it, aside from all the battery tech, which is probably more advanced than most European manufacturers have managed, it doesn't have the feel of, like when the Korean car companies sort of started to take off here. You'd go and sit in one and it felt a bit sort of, it was very grey and drab and. They haven't done that at all. They've got a proper bit of interesting styling in their interior. It's not necessarily the most well-built thing in the world, but it is, I would say, it's easily up there with like a VW ID.3 or something like that for build quality. And I think it's got a bit of surprise and delight. If you're a buyer and you, it does, if you get in into a, have
Where on earth did you get that from? Did you read that on a billboard?
you not heard of surprise and delight before? That's a classic. Nonsense phrase, but like you get into it and it's got silly little guitar string door pockets and it's got a screen that rotates and all this sort of stuff. It's just daft. People buy cars for stupid reasons, and that is probably enough reason for somebody to buy one of those as opposed to anything else. Yes, James.
John,
I think BY.
I have got some more news from Google, and that is Yang Wang is actually a car brand. I just put a space in the middle of it. If you take the space out, you find that the Yang Wang U8 is a 1,184 brake horsepower plug-in hybrid SUV, according to Top Gear magazine, that will be
Wow.
coming to the shores at some stage.
There
So I
you go.
basically mistyped it. I mistyped it.
Okay, very good.
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know about our brilliant event we've got coming up on March the 7th. It's called Car Dealer Live 2024, and it takes place at the British Motor Museum at Gaydon. Well, we'll have a packed day of sessions to help car dealers just like you improve your business. Tickets are available now at cardealerlive.co.uk with a special rate for car dealers. On the day, I'll have headline interviews with franchise car dealer boss Peter Vardy and Big Motoring World Group's Peter Wardell. To find out more and book your tickets, visit cardealerlive.co.uk now. Right, back to the podcast. Should I move us
You've set
away
up a
from
perfect,
Chinese challenger
just
brands?
some
Was
insight
that
there
my.
into the level of preparation that goes into this podcast.
That was. Actually, no, that was my story. You need to move us away.
I'll
I've
move you
conquered
away now. I'm
it.
going to move us on to another up and coming brand, which is set to take the UK by storm, and that's Genesis. And
Hang on, sorry, say that again.
I was hoping I might have got away with that. So Genesis are keen to boost their brand, is the title of this story from David
I
Batchelor.
bet they are.
Don't be so negative, James. Don't be so negative. So they've launched a search for more dealers to add to their, as James Batchelor puts, this fledgling network, which I thought was a nice turn of phrase. But anyway, Genesis have said previously, I think they had 7 dealer partners. I think 6 of their dealers are now up and running. Stop shaking your head, James. It's true. James Batchelor has written it. So they've got 6 dealers now. They're looking for up to 20. This, of course, was Genesis have had a bit of an up and down time of it in terms of, are we having dealers? Are we not having dealers? Initially, they launched, as we know, relatively direct to consumer. That didn't last very long. And they've now got a sort of agency model in operation. They like having stuff in retail spaces, as we know, which is not a new thing. Lots of manufacturers are doing that, of course. They've also now merged with Hyundai, of course, who that owned them in the UK. So Hyundai UK is now effectively managing Genesis's operations, which obviously is a story we covered before. I think probably that will supercharge things a little bit because, you know, Hyundai have been doing this for quite a while. They know what's what, and they've got a lot of relationships. And as part of this expansion, some, they say, will be talking to Hyundai's existing partners, but also they will be talking to partners they haven't worked with before, who are existing premium brand dealer groups. So going up to 20, which I think is good news for Genesis. I'm sure you agree, James.
I'm not going to comment on this because I think you know my thoughts on Genesis. But what I was going to do is ask an industry expert, and luckily we've got one of those, in Ian. Ian, if you had the choice between a BMW, an Audi, a Mercedes, and a Genesis...
Hang on a minute, James. We have just done a story talking about all these exciting new car brands called Yang Wang who are appearing next X number of years, or possibly playing table tennis with you. And now there's a new brand from South Korea, and you are dismissing it out of hand, James.
I'm not dismissing it because it's been here a little while, isn't it? But what I'm just saying is I think they're flogging a dead horse. That's what I'm saying.
I think if they were coming in, if they were undercutting their pricing and were offering an affordable but a luxury-built car, I think it'd be more attractive. I think when they're coming at a similar price point to the BMW, Audi brands, the German brands, for me, it's no contest. And, you know, I'm a BMW, Audi, Mercedes fan. So, yeah, I'd always put the money with them, unfortunately. But I'd like to see them grow. I think they've got good-looking cars. I think if you're over 50, maybe. They seem to be appealing to the older generation. You don't drive one, do you, John?
No, I don't. But I think they are excellent products. I do think they're very nice. I don't really like the name, but stop shaking your head, James. I think
that's the only bit I like about it. Actually, it's the only bit I like about it is the name. I think that's the only good thing. Really?
It's because you like Phil Collins.
I do.
I haven't driven one, so I can't comment. But yeah, I just think they need to be considerably cheaper than their German competitors to sort of really draw someone away from those brands, I think.
Right. Shall I move us on to my last story, John?
You better.
Move us away from Genesis. And I'll move us on to the undesirable used cars of 2023. So Autotrader shared a list with us, excuse me, of the cars that took the longest to sell last year. And I was quite surprised at the ones that were on the list, if I'm honest. Not a yellow Fabia. Not a yellow Fabia. That's not on the list, fortunately, because that could be very fast to sell, I'm sure. No, number one on the list was an Audi A4 diesel, which I was really shocked about, if I'm honest. I thought it was going to be something like the car that was in second place, the Subaru XV petrol hybrid. John, you're not allowed to comment because I know you love Subarus. But the other cars on there, like a Maserati Levante in third, and that Subaru in second, wasn't surprised. But the Audi in first place, a BMW 4 Series in fourth place, and a BMW 6 Series in fifth, I actually thought they were pretty desirable cars. But that Audi A4 diesel, on average last year, took 95 days to sell, quite worrying, isn't it?
Yeah, that applies to year-old Audi A4 diesels, we should say. So this is quite specific data, isn't it? This is not all A4 diesels in existence.
No.
I found that quite surprising, I have to say. I don't know if that, but you know, like as we learned, not to give away our video that I haven't edited yet from Autotrade the other day, that it's so nuanced, isn't it, in terms of, you know, we were asking why you had to get rid of a sticky bit of stock that you had and why the retail rating changed on it. Why suddenly no one wanted a flat red Skoda Citigo. And the answer was, well, it could be that suddenly there's been an influx of them into the market. And I mean, a year old A4 diesel, that is a prime example of, oh God, we've got too many of these, pump them all out, or they've all come off a lease or something like that. So there might just be too many of them. Nothing else in there surprises me particularly. As you say, Subaru XV petrol hybrid, that's quite a hard sell. Even I would say that, having driven one. Everything else is quite posh, isn't it? And posh stuff, Levantes and Portofinos and G-Class petrols, that's all going to hang around for a while, but you can afford to have it hanging around for a while, can't you? Because you make lots of money on it. Maybe not on a Levante, actually.
I mean, we're putting a lot of stall by the fact that we want to buy cars that turn quickly, don't we? So we're really focusing on that data when we're buying stuff in.
Mm.
And I just wonder quite how important that is, because, I mean, so far we've looked at, we've bought cars that are under 30 days to sell on when we're looking to buy them. But that SEAT Leon that I bought in had projected days to sell of quite high 40s, and I sold it within 12 hours. So I just wonder, there is, you can look at the data so much, can't you? But some of it has to be on gut. And actually it just happens to be the fact that there was a right buyer at the right time who wanted that car. And I don't know how much of it is guesswork and luck. I mean, Ian, you know how we're buying cars at the moment. Do you think
Yep.
we should be focusing on that sort of data? Or I mean, at the moment we don't know any other different. We haven't got experience and we can't buy on gut. But I mean, what would your advice be?
I think the data is really valuable and it's definitely not to be ignored, and it's clearly working so far. I think you've had one, was there one car that had that sort of didn't quite go to the data?
Citigo stuck.
Yeah. But on the whole, I think, yeah, you'd be mad not to take consideration. I think you'll find it harder as you upscale on a volume. So I think, you know, at the moment you can cherry pick those one or two cars each week. But I think if you start buying 30, 40 cars, it's going to be harder to find that number of, you know, above a certain grading, in a certain condition, with a certain history, in a certain colour palette, etc. So I think you'll have to have a mix of them. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see. I know, you know, some dealers will have great success with certain models, and the dealer down the road will say that's the worst thing for us, we don't sell them, and vice versa. And there is, you know, sometimes having a more niche car like a yellow Skoda Fabia, you're targeting a much more limited market, but there might be one person looking for one and there's no one out in the country. So then you've got their captive audience. So it can go either way. I've seen it many times where you buy something, oh my God, that's going to stick, and it sells the same day. And other cars, you think they're going to fly out, and it's with you for 90 days plus. So it is hard to gauge sometimes. But again, geographically, I think you'll find there'll be cars that will sell better in your area that may not work up north or vice versa. Yeah, the data definitely is worth.
Yeah, you can't. It's not a substitute for experience, though. I'm certainly realising that very, very quickly.
No, definitely.
Right, John, was that my story?
Yeah.
I've lost the plot today, but I'm out now. I have no.
I am also out of stories. So, Ian, before we ask for your verdict, are there any stories we've missed this week? Do you reckon?
I think the only one that I was aware of was the potential U-turn on the taxation class for pickups, which I think was quite a big thing. And I know dealers firsthand that we're dealing with that were getting rather anxious about that because it affected their business in quite a large way.
Mm.
And they'd already started to make sort of contingency plans and trying to work out how it's going to affect them. So the fact that's done a U-turn is great. And I think that helps certainly a lot of our clients. I dare say, although it's probably a smaller market compared to the whole motor trade, I think those dealers that specialise in those models and makes would definitely be a bit concerned at first.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I see a lot of double cab pickups. But yeah, I mean, it was almost about 2 days after we ran that story that they U-turned on it. I say that as though it's cause and effect and that we made them U-turn because someone listened to the podcast, but I don't think they did. I think it was perhaps the industry bodies that they spoke to. They said they consulted with, you know, farmers unions and all these things as well.
Yes. They said they listened carefully to the views from farmers and the motoring industry. So there's a first for you.
In that order.
There you go.
Yeah. No, good one. We definitely missed that. Thank you.
No
Okay,
problem.
so aside from that, who do you think, which was your favorite story? Who do you think is the winner?
Well, I really wanted to try and even the scores a little bit and throw it more James's way, but unfortunately, I can't deny the fact that the scrappage scheme and pushing the cars into Ukraine is undoubtedly, I think, the best story for me.
Fort arrived.
Great calls. I'm sure James will agree.
Well, you say that, but
He'll have to, or he's going to be walking to Surbiton to get his yellow Fabia.
I'm sure that is true. Thanks for the lift, John. Please don't put me on the bus.
I think great calls, and I really hope that does actually come to fruition because they're very worthy of that at the moment, for sure.
Yeah, just hope it's not too late.
Just before we go, Ian, do you want to do a very quick plug for people who want to get in touch with you? How can they get hold of you if they want to hear more about your business?
Yeah, so we'd love to speak to all dealers. We've got a website, it's just dealerkit.co.uk. Hop on there. There's an inquiry form, and you can send us your contact details, and we'll get in touch. Equally, we're on Instagram, I think Facebook as well. The website's about to be rebranded, so that's it's a sort of basic landing page. All our time and attention's gone into our product, but that's we've now got someone. Matt's joined us full time, who's going to be working on that. Doing some video content as well. We're doing some testimonials with customers, so there'll be more coming on the back of that. But yeah, it'll be myself, Lee, Oliver, and Matt will be in touch. And I say, where we can, we'll always try and come out and see dealers face to face, which is what I'm doing now in South Wales. And again, when we onboard dealers, we come out to them in person. So we'll come and meet you and make sure you're fully up to speed with it, rather than just going, there's your logins and not know how on earth to use it, sort of thing. So fully supportive.
Nice one.
But yeah, look forward to hearing from people.
Good plug. Felt like Ken Bruce there. Anybody else you want to say hello to?
I should say my wife and my kids. Not to sound cheesy, but they've been very understanding through this whole process because I've been away from home a lot. So yeah,
Yeah,
I
I
need to spend
bet.
some time with them. But they've
Well,
been very, very supportive, which helps.
thank you for giving up your time and while on the road and doing the podcast from your car. Much appreciated.
No pleasure. Thanks very much, guys. Really appreciate it.
No problem at all. Thank you for joining us. Well, that's all that's left for me to say is thank you, Ian, for judging today and joining us, as I say. It's been
Pleasure.
lovely to have you on and lovely to meet you because James goes on and on about his DMS. It's
Good
ridiculous.
to hear.
So it's nice to meet someone from behind the scenes. Thank you as well to James for, as my script says, not moaning about electric cars this week, which you didn't. Which is great, isn't it? And thank you for listening. We'll be back next week with another episode. So make sure you're subscribed so you can be notified when that goes live. If you want to check out the stories we mentioned today, take a look in the show notes below or head to cardealermagazine.co.uk. Thanks for listening. I'm going to go and drink a coffee now. Goodbye.
Goodbye.